The opening words of the novel she wanted to write were fixed in her head. Miriam left the gaslit hall and went slowly upstairs. But what then? It was impossible to go on telling about her, to let reality filter through. She had to keep her own voice out of it. No explaining, summing up, depicting characters and incidents in hard, immutable lines. There had to be another way of writing convincingly. What was it?
"Civilization! Civilization, indeed!" cried Mr. Parker, delighted. "Look, my dear Mary, look at William Healy's windows. Blue shoes and nankeen boots. Who would have expected such a sight at a shoemaker's in Old Sanditon? This is new within the month. There was no blue shoe when we passed this way a month ago. Glorious indeed! Well, I think I have done something in my day. Now for our hill, our health-breathing hill."
In ascending, they passed the lodge gates of Sanditon House and saw the top of the house itself among its groves. It was the last building of former days in that line of the parish. A little higher up, the modern began, and in crossing the down, a prospect house, a Bellevue cottage, and a Denham place were to be looked at by Charlotte with the calmness of amused curiosity, and by Mr. Parker with the eager eye which hoped to see scarcely any empty houses. I was exactly 5 years and 2 months old when war was declared. I remember sitting on my mother's lap at my grandma's house in Nelson Street, Nottingham, on that fateful night, the 3rd of September, 1939.
"Quite a man, this Bonaparte. Quite a man. He can beat and conquer anyone living. And they say he's small and puny, nothing much to look at."
She had the irritating notion that he was ashamed to be seen with her. "Would it be better to not isolate ourselves?" she asked, not bothering to hide her pique at being hidden away. "I want to get to know you better," he said. "Being away from the others suits my purpose. They may think we're up to no good." "They all know me well enough to know that I'm always up to no good."
"What do you think heaven will be like, Daisy?" "A colossal bore, most likely." "Oh, you don't. It all depends what types you'll have to mix with. Suppose I found myself surrounded by a lot of idiotic women engaging in good works. Them, of course, not me. All gracious and condescending and holier than thou. Well, that's my view of it anyway. I could be talking through my hat, I very often do."
Circumstances had made Gregorius rich beyond all calculation. He owned fleets and palaces, stallions, cities. Indeed, he owned so much that to those who were finally charged with enumerating his possessions, when the events of this story reached their monstrous conclusion, it sometimes seemed it might be quicker to list the items Gregorius did not own. When he got home at 11:15, his sons were in bed and his wife sat awaiting him. Having taken off his coat and his cap, he sat down to supper in his shirt sleeves. Do as he might, she was fascinated by him. He had a strong neck with the crisp hair growing low. Let her be angry as she would, yet she had a passion for that neck of his, particularly when she saw the great vein rib under the skin.